Hello all and welcome to the Mental Thoughtcast. I am your host, Jake Dole, and with me is my guest today.
Hey, I'm Casey Bowker.
Hey Casey, it's been a long time since we've seen each other.
I know.
So, right off the bat, Galaxy's Edge. Have you read up on it?
Of course.
Did you see the lightsaber thing?
Of course.
I want to go to Disney tomorrow and build my own lightsaber.
I want to go to Disney in 2022 and build my own lightsaber.
Once it's calmed down a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to get there and it's going to be like Build-A-Bear Workshop. I'm going to build the lightsaber and then I'm going to take that Kyber Crystal and be like, I'm completed.
That is the best thing that I've heard about it, that it's not like a cheesy like plastic one. Like it actually feels like there's some weight behind it. I think that it might be metal.
It's like a force action lightsaber from what, like those $150
yes,
ones. Yep,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, which is probably how much they'll cost. Which to me, to have a custom lightsaber for that cost, I'll take it any day.
Yeah, I heard that it's going to be more expensive than a ticket into the park itself.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so like $200.
But I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I know when I finally go to Disney for the first time, I'm going to Galaxy's Edge.
Well, I want to do so to stay in the rooms. They have not announced the official price, but if you want to stay in there in Black Spire, or Batuu rather is the planet, but $1,000 a night.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I told my wife, I said, just one night. Like, I don't care if it can be all of the Christmases and birthdays for a couple of years, but I want one night where you fully are like, I am in Star Wars. Because there's droids, there's people dressed up in Jim Henson creature costumes, and then regular costumes, you're drinking the blue milk, and there's alcohol in this side of the park, which they've never done before. Like, they have said that they have spent the most money at this park more than any other park they've ever done.
I heard the Millennium Falcon ride is 26 minutes.
Yeah. They said it's the longest ride that you'll ever do. I just read a whole set report. Like, they didn't have it all done yet, but like the reviewers, press got to go, and like they said, like everything works. Four people, no, maybe even more, maybe like six people can ride it at a time, because you can be a gunner, you can be a pilot, you can be a co-pilot, and then you can be two like engineers.
I wouldn't even call that a ride, and I know personally, I would just be there the entire time, like.
That was really good.
Just wooking it up inside the ride.
Yeah, that was very good.
Yeah, that's got me excited.
Yeah, my sister is going down with one of my cousins. They have two young kids, and they're going, and I go, are you going to go to Disney World? They're like, no. Or, sorry, where am I going to go to Star Wars Land? And they both said, we ain't doing it.
Okay. Staying in the Disney World, yeah. You know. I just watched Wreck-It Ralph 2 the other day. I would say it's a better version of Ready Player One than the movie Ready Player One was.
I read your tweet, because I have not seen Wreck-It Ralph 2. I've seen Ready Player One multiple times, but I know that I like it, and you were not as big of a fan.
My wife loves it to the point that she bought the movie.
Oh, I own it. I've seen it at least five times.
We own it, but yeah. I'm from a standpoint of that book was so good and the movie just didn't do it justice.
I it's hard. It's really hard. We actually, my wife and I just had this conversation the other day, because we went and saw Captain Marvel and I did not like it. The reason why is I usually am pretty good about separating like the source material from the movie version, like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings or whatever. But what it really came down to is everybody that's in the comics, their screen counterparts, for the most part, embody those characters. Like, I feel like, obviously, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. And, yeah. And now the comics in Marvel, as you know, they've pretty much just emulated the actors at this point. Like, they completely switched it. Captain Marvel, or Carol Danvers, Brie Larson, to me, was nothing like she is in the comics. And I was really, like, wanting her to, like, get to that point where I was like, okay, like, where's the snarky, the sarcastic, like, the no BS, like, she's really much like Tony. And even in the comics, they're good friends because they're so much like each other. And she was nothing like that. And that was, for me, I was like, I cannot wait to see this woman in Endgame, because I think that the Russo brothers will bring her to that level.
That'll be interesting. I haven't seen that one, and I probably won't see it before I see Endgame, just the way my movie viewing goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, timing-wise, for you, it will probably still be in the theater with how much money it made. You might be able to do it back-to-back, like take the kid to the grandparents and just go, we're going to go to the movies for 6 hours.
Well, we're going to make our last Disney diversion here.
Oh, yeah, yes.
And my tweet or messaging to you the other day, Frozen.
I cannot wait for Frozen 2.
Okay, so my 3-year-old is obsessed with Frozen.
I have seen
up to the like start of the third act multiple times.
Okay.
Very little do we get all the way past the part where Elsa is arrested.
Yeah.
To the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But Hans' character change makes no sense to me.
So remind me. I know you said it, and I was like, who's Han again? Hans
is the
male lead, right?
No, that's Kristoff. Hans is the person that crashes into Anna in the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
And they get proposed, like, at the end of the first act.
Okay.
And that's what causes Elsa to freeze everything.
Gotcha.
So his character change makes no sense to me, becoming the bad guy of the movie.
Right.
So I did all this reading up on it, and I'm like, okay, well, what is this character change? Logical explanation, they had to rewrite the movie. And in rewriting the movie, they didn't know what to do with Hans, and that's where his character came.
Huh. Did you read, so does the internet confirm your theory?
Well, that's the one of the theories I read online. But the illogical explanation that makes the most sense,
yeah,
the trolls cursed Anna, so Hans would fall out of love with her, so Kristoff could be with her.
Okay.
It was an interesting little theory.
I need to rewatch Frozen, apparently. Yeah. I need to rewatch it before the new one anyway, but now I'm going to watch it with a more discerning eye.
I got it right on my Google Play there, so we can turn on Frozen, come back and do another Frozen podcast.
That's it. This is the new mental Frozen cast.
This is the mental fog cast where we just talk about Frozen all day long.
I love it.
So what you been up to? I know you got the show. Are you doing a season 2?
We are doing a season 2. So I do a food and beverage show here in Rochester. Kind of like a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. But not dives. season 2, so part of the problem is between seasons is where we're going to go and what we want to do and if we want to change it, blah, blah, blah. And now what's happened is we're going to go on the road. So we're going to go to Buffalo, Syracuse, Ithaca. We're going to kind of go around, and we may be changing it from Rock Connoisseur to Rock Connoisseur's Road Trip.
Ooh, I like the name. You're going to do the Anchor versus Duffs?
I would like to do that. It's hard because I'm not a critic in the show. Like, everything's great in the show. Like, you know, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, everything's good as to what you're eating. Personally, I'm a Duffs person.
Ooh, Anchor all the way. They're not oversauced. They're nice and crispy. It's in a nice, dangerous area of Buffalo that you feel like you're going to get shanked at.
Are you in? Wings. You know that Amherst is like the third safest city in the country?
It was number one for a long time. I haven't been to Anchor in a while, but I just remember it being sketchy the last time.
Yes. Anchor is very sketchy.
Anchor.
Yeah. Anchor Bar, man. You know, the wings are big, and I like that, and they don't taste bad. But Duffs, they're like so flavorful.
I don't know, man. I really just like Anchor.
Went to Duffs, okay? You didn't go to Anchor Bar.
But, you know, if I'm in Buffalo, I hit up Paula's Donuts.
Oh my gosh, yeah, yeah. That's right over in Kenmore. I love that place.
My buddy used to live around the corner there. So whenever we visited him, it was Paula's Donuts.
That's good drunk food, too, because it's open, I think, like 24 hours or really late.
What was our drunk food? Jim's, I think, is the place. Oh, Jim's Steak, yeah. The place that has the chicken and steak hot sub. Yep. The Sting.
He's thinking of, like, a Stinger.
Yeah, the Stinger.
Yeah.
That was the, yep, that was the good drunk food.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. So, as far as your listeners go, I'm going to guess that most of them are going to be Western New York for now. You're probably familiar with Jim's Steakout if you're listening. And if not, go to Buffalo, go to Jim's Steakout. I will say, from somebody who lived in Buffalo for, like, 7 or 8 years, I went to UB, and I also just, like, have family there, so my whole life, Jim's Steakout, like, is the best chicken finger sub, period. Just, it is. Probably the best steak sub, unless you go to, like, Philly, and then I'm sure that you could debate that. We don't know how to make chicken finger subs in Rochester. I do not eat them
horrible
here.
They're always like the chicken fingers are put in that heating unit and kept heated.
Yes.
And like you're the only person that ordered the chicken finger sub,
yes,
all day, so you get the chicken fingers that have been in the heating,
yeah,
unit for like 6 hours
and
they
don't
out.
Like they just don't do the basic, which is what you're supposed to do. Look, this, let me tell you how you do that. Take a chicken finger frozen, you fry it, then you take it out, you put it in a bowl with whatever sauce that the people ordered. Then you put it in the oven and bake it into it for like a couple minutes. For some reason in Rochester, they take the chicken fingers, they do all the first part, and then they don't mix them in the bowl and bake them. They just like put on some sauce onto the chicken fingers. It's so gross. It's lazy. I'm sorry. That's what it is.
I mean, the only food I find that I like sitting in that heating unit for an extended amount of time is Mark's Pizza. Because it
okay
makes the grease off of it. And Mark's really doesn't have that bad of a pizza.
It's okay,
it's
yeah
not covered in grease.
Yeah, you're gonna, that's gonna happen, yeah.
So I guess our other part of local news, since this is becoming a news podcast pretty quickly, is what are your thoughts on Hart's Grocer closing?
Inevitable.
You know, you can't compete with Wegmans. Their prices couldn't compete. And we're a driving city. We don't need a shopping store where you can just drive to a Wegmans that's literally a little bit down the road.
I will say this. So when I lived downtown, you know, you've been there many times at the condo. Hart's was, when I was living there, the only place that you could get breakfast food in the area. Without going to like a chain, like without going to Dunkin' Donuts or McDonald's or something. As well as getting coffee. So I would get, they used to have like a, or they still have it for now, but it's an avocado, egg, and bacon sandwich, which is to die for. Like, it is so good. And then their drink selections are really good. So I would go there, usually in the morning time, I'd walk, get my sandwich, get my coffee, and then just pick up some groceries that I thought, like, for me, someone who's like mostly lactose-free, they had a really good selection of like lactose-free stuff, and then Hart's would also discount things, which Wegmans does not usually do. Hart's would be like, we've had these for too long, we can just discount them because they're not going to go anyplace else, whereas Wegmans is like, we'll just give them to another Wegmans and they'll sell out.
That's got like 3 layers of mold on it, we'll sell it.
Yeah, we'll just shake it.
I'm very excited for what's happening over in that area, though. Just the whole
and
former inner loop, the former
yeah
inner loop area.
Yeah,
the Museum of Play expansion is going to be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, so they need $30 million right now in order to keep going.
But they're still building it, even
they
though
are,
they're raising money.
Yeah, they're raising money. So basically, every little bit that comes in, then they go and build. And then if you see them not building, it means they're still waiting for more money to come. But yes, once it's done, it's very exciting. And actually, Pop Rock downtown there, right on East Ave,
yeah,
the comic book shop, what they want to do is a comic book convention this summer, which is going to be like a walking convention. So it will actually be outdoors.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and unlike any other convention, which is... cost money just to get into, like, this will be free. So like some things you could go to, it might cost some money, but for the most part, like, you just want to be in your cosplay and walk around, you don't have to pay the $20 admission to do it. It's just just do it. Everyone else is around. You know, if you want to go and buy comics, you can. If you want to go buy pops, you can. If you want to go to a panel, you can. But the whole idea is to open up the city downtown and make it a walking convention, which is insane to me.
That would be absolutely amazing. And, like, if they team up with, like, The Strong, that would be really good for them.
That's the plan.
Well, yeah. I know that, I think the plan is to put the official Video Game Hall of Fame in the new part of the museum when it opens.
Because so Rochester it's even bigger.
Hosts, yeah, so, like, now it's just a section of the museum.
Yeah.
Rochester hosts both the Video Game and Toy Hall of Fame, but there isn't really the greatest area for it in the museum right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we have the potential to do some things that other cities don't, and I think we're, like, really on the cusp of it. You know, like, if we had the money to go and fully get this Museum of Play expansion done, like, okay, cool. Like, then you add in that video game element, like, what else? No place else in the world has it. Like, that's a thing that we have here in
yeah.
Rochester. Same thing with old toys and
well, we're going to have the new theater. I mean, I got my Hamilton tickets, and I'm going to see it at the Odd, and I always feel like part of the ceiling's just waiting to fall on me when I'm at the Odd, and, like, half the speakers are broken in there, like...
Yeah, I also bought my Hamilton tickets today.
I just wish, like, Galisano had at least still given the money to them so they could at least buy new speakers.
Yeah.
Like, just that alone.
Yeah, the Kodak Theater is great. That's a really good theater.
Yeah, but the Odd is just, it's falling apart. I mean, I saw Paw Patrol live there the other weekend, and it was loud.
Okay.
It was very loud. This is what happens when you have a 3-year-old who goes see Paw Patrol live.
Don't at me. I guess there's worse ways to spend a Saturday afternoon or whatever.
It was a Saturday morning, and then I went and played D&D for 7 hours.
Okay, well then.
After that.
You earned it.
Yeah, I had to get played in, leveled up to level 2, join the campaign, and not play my character right at all.
Okay, what are you?
I am a Dwarven War Priest with a lawful neutral alignment. So a War Priest, we're actually playing Pathfinder instead of
D&D. Okay, okay, I was going to say.
It's a crossover class. Yep, it's a crossover class of a fighter and a cleric.
Okay.
So healing abilities, but more fight ability.
Yeah.
Has some weakness that the hit dies a D8 instead of a D10, but it was doing some damage.
It sounds like a cool character.
It is. It
you like your Dwarven fighter guy, don't you?
You know what I was going to do... I, a lot of times, play human characters because I can relate to them,
yeah.
And I built this Dwarven character, and I'm messaging the DM on my character sheet, and he goes, your character sheet's all wrong. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you have a +4 AC against giants? And I was like, I do? Oh yeah, dwarves, they get a +4 AC against giants. That's not wrong at all.
Huh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But okay.
It's because they are such a small class, giants have a hard time hitting them
right.
or something.
Right.
So, and the campaign we're playing has a lot of giants in it, so he
so
was
you have the advantage.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think if I have my shield out, my AC is a 20 against a giant.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit hard to hit.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. That was a day Paw Patrol live then. D&D for 7 hours. I just don't have the time for 7 hours of D&D like I used to.
It's been a while, man. I don't know. The last time we played, I think it was... And yet, D&D is usually 4. I will say that. 4
yeah,
is about the time.
I would say the main game was 4 hours. The problem was I had to be played in. So
yeah.
That was 3 hours in front of it. So
okay.
I'm really finding, though, that I like the... the like single game RPGs where you're not playing multiple games because it's easier to play a game and just be done with it.
Yep.
I really want to try out Fate Court, even if we don't play like a full game. It looks like a really cool way to do storytelling too.
Okay.
So you with Fate Court you have your skills, but instead of rolling a d20, you roll up to like 6 fate die, and those fate die have 2 pluses, 2 minuses, and 2 zeros on
yeah.
it. So, like, let's say your skill's 3, and you need a 4 to complete it. You'll roll your fate die, and you add your pluses and minuses to your roll roll. So, like, let's say, you roll four pluses,
yep.
you now have a seven, you complete it. You roll four minuses, you have a negative two, you very much fail.
Right, so right.
It's a much more base game, and I've heard it can be used for storytelling, in that, like, if you wanted to write a story, you could kind of use the Fate rulebook to write the story, and then it gets more plot twist, because, like, yeah, you might want to have your hero win, but if you're playing through Fate rules and actually rolling the die as you write the story,
yeah,
and your character fails, you follow what the role comes out.
It's really interesting.
So,
yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
That rulebook, I think you can pick it up for free online for the PDF. It's not any cost. I know I picked it up at one point when it was free, and I think it still is free.
Okay.
So.
Would you want to be a DM?
So I've done it once, and I don't think I really like DMing D&D.
Yeah.
Because it's not as... It's a little more structured.
Right.
From what I saw with Fate Core, it's not structured at all, to the point that it can almost be DM-less, that the DM could be a player,
like,
without...
Like, everyone is John.
Yeah, like, everyone's John. That game was just insane. Oh, that game went off the rails fast. So, other thing to cover with you while you're here, Kickstarter. You've had a successful Kickstarter.
I have.
You know, I've kickstarted a few board games in your project, but we were talking about Pitchstorm when you walked in.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
How's the game? You looking at another Kickstarter or any other projects out there?
Oh my gosh, Jake. Too many.
I know. You know, I try to get creative and write for you, but my problem is I get the story idea and I can't flesh it out. That's why I wanted to do that Storytellers podcast, where I can tell a story and then just be done with it.
Right.
Because it's in there, it runs its course, and it's done.
Yeah. No, it's... So I did a comic book called Hollowed, and did a successful Kickstarter last year. So Hollowed 2 has been written. The artist is working on it now, so I'm excited to see what he, I mean, I've seen some stuff that he's coming up with, but so we'll do a, like, so let me just say, running a Kickstarter sucks by yourself. You almost have to have a partner, because for me it was like so overwhelming, like, oh, I gotta do updates, I gotta go buy shipping supplies, I gotta make sure I have everyone's, like, orders, like, who's local, who's, a foreigner, like, you know, overseas, like, where's all this stuff going, like, in my house, like, when I was, like, fulfilling the stuff, it was just, like, piles of, like, shipping equipment, scale, you know, comics, t-shirts, pint glasses, and I was like, I will never do this again.
I feel like for the Kickstarters I've checked out, that, like, after your first one, it really becomes a free-for-all, you know, where you're not running it yourself. You have a company that's running your Kickstarter.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys like, I think you played with us, right? Drinking Quest, like the Jason Anarchy game. This is a while ago, like, so our friend Jackie, she was one of the ones who actually... help fund that one, and then I don't know. I know we played it with, like, Don, maybe Colin. I guess I just assumed, like, maybe you were there too. But so it's fun. It's like you're a barbarian or whatever. It's a D&D game, but it's a card game, but it's all centered around drinking. Anyway, so that guy has now done probably about six different card games. It seems to be just him. Like, maybe he has other, you know, minions working for him, but it's all under his name, was Jason Anarchy.
No, I was there for the Witcher board game fiasco.
Oh my god, we don't talk about that. First rule of Witcher board games, don't talk about that.
When you pull up the how to play and the YouTube videos 45 minutes, you don't talk about that.
Oh my god, never again. as far as, like, so I have another comic book that is getting ready to go and get launched next month in April. It was supposed to be, this week, but our artist just did not gel with us. We had to get a new artist, which kind of makes you have to start over, but it's going good. The new artist is amazing. We're getting ready to go that. So I wrote this comic book with another guy who's done successful Kickstarters, so he knows. That's actually how I met him, was like through Kickstarter. So that's been good. And then there's this other idea that I've told you about. Actually, you and I have talked about it for years, is the radio.
Yeah.
The radio drama.
Yeah, that would be, that I think would be an investment, though, because we'd actually have to get like a soundboard and mics and do
Well, so that's the thing, right? I didn't even think about it as being a Kickstarter idea. Didn't even enter my mind. And then I was talking to this guy, his name's Daniel Cooper. He does music here in Rochester, and his whole thing is like, he likes video game music. So the stuff that he composes is like Halo level, or like How to Train Your Dragons, John Powell, which is, that trilogy is considered one of the best soundtrack trilogies since like the original Star Wars. Like the music is amazing for those movies.
Have you ever listened to Mission to Zix?
I've heard about this.
Oh, I love Mission
I
to
think
Zix.
You, I'm pretty sure I, you probably told you. I think I probably listened to it.
So it's a podcast out of New York City, and it's a comedy group. And so they posted a video on their Twitter the other day, and it was them recording the podcast.
Yeah.
It was just all of them in a living room recording a podcast. And then they posted the 45 seconds of them recording, then the 45 seconds after all the audio editing that went into it. So.
Yeah, so, well, what I was thinking is, okay, so, first of all, the idea is this. It's kind of like using the Dungeons & Dragons tropes for the characters that are in this world, which is a sci-fi, western, fantasy world. So, the main hero probably won't talk, will have a big sword. This world will explode, and he'll have to... you know, get thrust into saving the world. There'll be a, you know, female character and that he probably ends up falling in love with, blah, blah, blah. So, typical Dungeons and Dragons or fantasy-type tropes. And then, so we'll do the audio for that. So, what I was thinking for the Kickstarter is probably use these mics. Some of my mics. Jackie's mics. And
nice combo of mics.
Yeah, nice combo of mics. And just record that first episode. And I'll edit it and do the sound effects. And so that guy, Daniel Cooper, I told him about the idea because I want it to sound like a sci-fi fantasy western soundtrack. So John Carpenter has some songs that sound exactly like it is in my head.
So you just went to him and you're like, okay, so what I need you to do is John Carpenter meets Ennio Morricone.
Literally, that is what I said to him.
I want you to do the theme song from Escape from New York combined with a fistful of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm not even telling you that's, well, I can show you the text. I think that's exactly what I said. And he was like, I can do that. So, like, I wrote a sci-fi comic book and he did the theme song to that comic, which someday I'll show you when I watch that one, probably in the summertime. He did an insanely good job. Like, this should not be for my comic book.
Well, you know, before we move on to the next thing, you're launching another Kickstarter. This will hopefully be out before that, so go find his Kickstarter.
So the comic book is called Inferi. It's about three students in Quantico who end up discovering this world of, like, mythological creatures that are committing crime around the country, and their professor brings them into this world where they have to fight creatures like Yataglanchi or vampires or Wendigos, like, etc.
Bigfoot,
yeah, I think that's, you know, Sasquatch, whatever. So, like, Loch Ness, like, all these mythological creatures that we know but are committing, like, actual crimes. So they're solving these, like, FBI-type crimes, but they're being committed by creatures, so, yeah.
Okay, I want to take a quick break, but I got a pitch for you on this.
Okay,
have you heard about the legal black spot in Yellowstone?
No.
So, I listen to a lot of the How Stuff Works podcast, and on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, they covered this. Apparently, there's a part of Yellowstone that falls in a different state, and based on the way prosecution works, if you murdered someone in that part of Yellowstone, it would have to be prosecuted by the state Yellowstone is in.
Yeah.
But this is in a different state, so you would pretty much get away with murder legally. Bigfoot's committing murders in those areas. That's so
funny. I'm writing it down. We'll work it
out. Okay, let's take a quick break.
Cool.
Welcome back to the Mental Fogcast. So, we had a very interesting conversation on our break that we need to bring into the podcast right now.
Absolutely.
And it is the plot line to Metal Gear Solid, and that there is only one person in the entire world that could explain the plot line to Metal Gear Solid. Now, Casey, have you played the Metal Gear Solid games through?
Not all of them, because they just get ridiculous. Okay. But I played my share.
They get very ridiculous, and after Metal Gear Solid 3, they get questionable in how good they are.
Yeah.
5 was horrendous, and 4 just wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Play it on.
But going into the one person that could explain it, it is Alex Jones of InfoWars is the only person that could explain this series. And I'm just going to give you a brief overview of Metal Gear Solid 1 from Alex Jones.
So hear me out here. There is this nuclear-powered robot. he is in Alaska. It's called Metal Gear Rex. A terrorist organization has got into Shadow Moses and taken it over. The president of the United States sends in a super soldier to go in and get the robot back. But turns out the president of the United States was actually working with the terrorists the whole time to take control. You know, hop to Metal Gear Solid 4, and one of the guys, Revolver Ocelot, had his arm shot off by Solid Snake, he had his Solid Snake's clone brother, Liquid Snake's arm sewed onto him, then went through psychotherapy to become Liquid Snake in Metal Gear Solid 4. And it's all about the Patriots and how they're going to take over the United States government.
Yeah, that concisely explains some things.
It doesn't explain a thing, but it definitely is the plot of an InfoWars episode.
That's true. Yeah, this, I don't know. You know, so the first game, Metal Gear, was based off of Escape from New York.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? So Snake.
Even in Metal Gear Solid 2, when Solid Snake needs a code name, he goes by Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
So it is a straight up kind of ripoff.
Yeah, well, they've admitted to it. They've said, like, hey, I'm just a big Escape from New York fan, but I just think, like, they got way far away from that plot line.
You know, before Cracked got torn apart by its overlords that own it, they were trying to start a whole podcast network, so they were kind of trying to do the How Stuff Works type thing.
Yeah.
And they did a movie podcast where they talked about movies in depth, and right before they got canceled, I think they were doing John Carpenter Week, and they did Escape from New York and talked about the movie and, you know, how certain people hated each other on set, but apparently... when he went to go shoot one of the scenes, he didn't have the permits to shoot it.
Yeah.
So, like, they had to shoot it super stealthy in the middle of night. And because of that, there is a part where a helicopter flies behind a set scene. So the helicopter disappears when it shouldn't.
Really?
Yeah. And I found that very interesting.
That's cool. So Cracked no longer around?
So Cracked is still around, and the Cracked podcast is still around.
Okay.
But they laid off most of their Los Angeles-based talent.
Okay.
And the staff, I think, is now all, at least for the website...
Ex-Buzzworthy.
Yeah, at least for the website, it's all those independent, you know, you get paid per word.
Okay.
People, and they have, like, one or two people on staff that are still part of the podcast, doing the podcast. Alex Schmidt, he was on Jeopardy, actually.
Really?
Yeah, he's a good podcaster. Yeah. You know?
So, are you familiar with David Wong from Cracked?
Yes.
So he wrote the book John dies at the end.
Yes.
And then I think, what is the second book? Like, this book has spiders in it, or this book contains spiders. Have you read those books?
I have not, but I know the books.
They're awesome.
So there was a book that I think I picked up on audiobook, actually. I was going to cancel Audible. I had one credit left, and they were doing a buy two, get one. And I bought this book called Critical Role.
Oh, and the one that just reached... Is this the thing that's on Kickstarter right now?
I don't know. It's a book about a D&D campaign.
Yeah, but Critical Role is like a fame... It's like the...
Oh, yeah, there's a...
The podcast.
Yeah, so this book is something different. So okay. This one is a group of people who like playing D&D, but just like they don't like being dungeon masters at all. So they hire a dungeon master. And they piss off the dungeon master, and he gives them dice to play with. And they're magical dice that actually transport them into...
A game.
The game.
Genius.
Yeah.
I love it. I'll be honest with you. That kind of stuff, like Jumanji, Jumanji again, whatever. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, like where they go inside that video game.
Jumanji, more Jumanji, starring The Rock.
Or like, that's good. when you, in the original Dungeons and Dragons cartoon from the 80s, the kids get sucked in to Dungeons and Dragons. And I think anytime kids get sucked into games, I'm probably a fan of any of Goosebumps or Are You Afraid of the Dark or any of that stuff. I love that.
Kingdom Hearts. I mean, that's pretty much kids get sucked into a game.
Yeah.
The game is in Disney, but...
Please explain that one as well, because I heard the plot to 3 just gets even more convoluted.
There's this kid who somehow gets pulled into the Disney universe through Keyblades, but it's also the Final Fantasy universe.
Yeah. The first game is really good.
They could have made it more convoluted by adding Marvel and Star Wars to it.
That was my dream for part 3, and they did not do that.
A lightsaber Keyblade?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That would have been the best.
No, make it even more convoluted. Add a different key. Lock and Key gets added.
Jake, you know Lock and Key's coming out.
I know.
They've already got the full cast. I think they're started filming.
His other show's coming out, too. Nosferatu.
Nosferatu's been screened.
Yes, the screening was last night, I think.
And then there's another one, too. Creepshow, which is coming to Shudder. So,
is Joe Hill involved in Creepshow?
Yes. So his dad's not, but... So the original was Stephen King and George Romero.
Yeah.
And now it's Joe Hill and some other people, but like he's the main dude on Creepshow.
Oh my god. Let's just give a major shout out to Joe Hill.
Yes.
He has, you know, I think he did a really good thing by not taking his father's last name to become his own person. And I loved Heart-Shaped Box, 20th Century Ghost, Lock and Key.
Horns.
Horns. I tried listening to Nosferatu.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the
voice
actor, yeah. So I gotta read Nosferatu. His new short story book, Strange Weather, was really good.
Okay.
There was a story in it called Rain, I believe, about the rain suddenly turns to like nails that start falling down. That's and the apocalypse level event that happens from it being raining nails.
Yeah.
And then he has another story in it that is about like an army guy who, you know, has PTSD and is a gun nut.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting view on the whole gun debate.
Okay. So I'll have to check it out. I think he's a great writer. I think it's funny when you listen to Stephen King talk and you know how much he puts out, like what, 4 books a year or something. I was like, did he raise this kid? Because, like, how can you be a dad and be writing, like, that much? Other than, like, this kid just sees his dad constantly writing, and it's just like, I guess that's what I'm doing.
Cocaine? I think the answer is cocaine.
There's probably a lot of cocaine, but did his son take cocaine,
too? No. Joe Hill does not put out the same amount of Stephen King.
He does not even come close to it.
Which is okay, because not everything Stephen King writes is that good.
Joe Hill's on a quality, not quantity kind of level. Yeah.
I mean, and Stephen King has gone back and rewrote books. I know that he edited The Gunslinger, the first book of the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
Because it didn't fully fit into the universe he expanded on in the future books. And I've heard that in Dark Tower 6, he wants to write himself out of the book. Because he's a character in his own book series.
So he's becoming a George Lucas of his own creation.
George Lucas. You know, I read some very interesting things on George Lucas and how the original three films, his wife was a editor on it. His first wife.
Okay.
And she kind of held him in place from going too far off the rails with things. And he didn't have that for the prequel trilogy.
So, for the first trilogy, George Lucas came up with a story. He got help on the script, even for A New Hope. And even, you know, Star Wars is silly. It really is. Even in the other ones, there's some silly, stupid jokes. But we just love it, and it doesn't matter. And then in Empire Strikes Back, I mean, that's, what's his name? Ivan Kershner.
The guy who's, like, wrote a ton of hit movies.
Right, so, like, okay, that's George Lucas' story, but he didn't do it, you know, he didn't direct it. And then the third one, again, it's, it's Irvin Kershner and, oh, God, the guy who wrote Episode 7 with JJ. I'm, like, blanking on it right now. Anyway, so, George Lucas had more to do with A New Hope, but the other two, he didn't really have that much to do other than, you know, these are my characters, this is what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And then the prequels was the only time where he got full reign and nobody said anything. Nobody said, George,
you never challenged him.
That's
so we can go on a little bit of a nice, we started with Star Wars, we can go back to Star Wars here.
Okay.
A nice tangent of Star Wars. So let me start off by saying, I personally think that the new Topher Grace Star Wars super trailer is a movie I want to see. I want to see a full version of that trailer.
Well, he did do that. Do you remember?
He did it with the prequels, right?
Yes.
The prequels, 185 minute long movie.
I think, he took all three of them and just put in all the good parts.
Well, I mean, so I finally got my wife to watch all of the Star Wars movies.
And all of them?
All of them.
Like Rogue One, Solo, everything?
We saw Solo in theaters.
Yeah.
We have everything but Solo on Blu-ray.
Okay.
So, in doing it, I did the 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8 viewing for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we threw Rogue One and Solo in there randomly. We didn't watch those probably in what order they should have been in.
Yeah.
And in rewatching those and watching it in those that order, there is a story there that if you're willing to watch it and pay attention to details, is extremely good. But let's just be honest, the first like 65 minutes of The Phantom Menace could be cut from the story and make zero difference to the overall story. Start it when they get to Coruscant. That's where the movie needs to start. Everything else could be opening scroll. Trade Federation, they meet this kid, decide to bring him to Coruscant, movie starts.
Yeah.
But the story there that I noticed is, I think it's in episode 2, Yoda and Mace Windu are talking, and maybe it's even episode 1, they're talking about how the Sith are back, and how they didn't notice the Sith are back, and Yoda or me says, do you notice our connection to the Force is diminishing?
I think it's at the end of 1.
Is it the end of 1?
Yeah.
So,
because that was the whole thing. They didn't know the Phantom Menace, which was that for them, they thought it was Darth Maul. But
so you have that, and then you have the whole balance to the Force thing. Anakin's there to bring balance to the Force. And I would argue that Anakin does bring balance to the Force. Anakin destroys the Jedi and Sith. I wouldn't consider Luke a full Jedi. Like, he was trained, but he's not your traditional Jedi.
Thank you for saying that.
So now you have a new order. They're still calling themselves the Jedi, but Anakin's brought balance. He destroyed both the light and dark side of the Force that has been the establishment for the past 1,000+ years. Now you have the Force Awakens, where the Force is finally full power back in the galaxy. And I think that's why everyone's like, oh, Rey and Kylo are so much more powerful than, like, Master Yoda. Well, yeah, because the Force is finally awakened again. They have the full power of the Force behind them.
So, you had me up until then. I don't know if they're more powerful than Yoda.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying a lot of fans are like, you know, Yoda had a hard time lifting one rock, or, you know, the X-Wing, and Rey just lifts a whole bunch of rocks at the end of Episode 8. And I personally don't think that, but I do think the Force has awakened, and we will see more Force powers that we haven't seen in the first 6 movies, because that connection to the Force isn't broken anymore.
Okay, yeah, I'll go along with that. Luke is not a Jedi. Return of the Jedi, he's not a Jedi. He trained on Dagobah for, like, I don't know, a day, two days.
Luke's not a Jedi, Rey's not a Jedi, there is no Jedi.
Well, Jedi, he's a Jedi in 7, or, yeah, in 7. Like, yes. He learns to be a Jedi, but at the end of 6, he's not.
But, I mean, Luke's Jedi Order fails in part because he's not a fully trained Jedi, and Luke's fear drives him into hiding.
Right.
And that's him letting his dark side kind of take control of him.
It leads to suffering.
Yeah, but it leads him into hiding, and everyone's like, oh my god, Luke's such a wimp. The legendary Luke Skywalker would never do this. And I'm like, Luke never set out to save the universe when he was just wanted to be a rebellion pilot. Like, it's not surprising that, you know, Luke cut himself off from the Force and went into hiding.
Right.
So,
and we don't know how powerful Luke really is.
I mean, for what he was able to do with Kylo, that Force projection, he's pretty damn powerful.
Right, of course.
Like,
so I'm saying, like, there's probably other things he can do that we just haven't seen.
Right.
Yeah, I think, so for me, I think these new Star Wars movies and new canon since Disney has taken over is, it's really not Jedi and Sith anymore. Even in Rebels, it's not Jedi and Sith. It is Force users.
Right.
Good ones or bad ones. And that's it. They really have knocked down that whole idea.
I really think 9's going to end with Rey and Kylo maybe coming to some sort of new order that walks both sides of the Force.
Gray Jedi. Like a gray Ahsoka. Jedi.
Yeah, like, I mean, Rey falls to the dark side so easily. In the cave, you know, mm-hmm. She doesn't resist it at all, but she doesn't actually fall to the dark side and go into the cave, so it shows that Rey can walk that balance that maybe other people couldn't. Like, Mace might have been scared of the dark side because he was afraid he would fall to it, and Rey just doesn't have that fear.
Right. I think if you are told to be afraid of the Sith, and you have 1,000 years of people saying, these guys are bad. Yeah. What they do is bad. Then Rey is like, I don't even know what this is. I don't even know how I'm doing this. Like, I'm just going to roll with it. So, yeah, she doesn't. And again, like, at the end of Last Jedi, which I did appreciate, this ending was like when you show that little kid who uses the Force just to pick up a broom. Anyone potentially could have the Force.
Well, I mean, you know, let's go off on a tangent of how bad the Jedi were. Like, think about it.
Oh, they're horrible.
They allowed slavery to happen. They ignored Force-sensitive kids just because they were too far away. Like, if Qui-Gon just didn't happen to be on Tatooine, he would have never found Anakin. One of the most powerful Force users in the galaxy.
Right.
It would have just remained a slave and potentially discovered some of his powers, you know, and the Jedi went and kidnapped kids.
Yeah, like, they needed Cerebro. Like, in X-Men, maybe that helmet that just reaches out.
I want to see these Master Yoda with Cerebro.
You know, I mean, it would have helped.
Yeah. I feel like there's whole podcast on Star Wars.
There is. There's a lot of them, actually.
I want to say, like, 20 minutes of our current 50 minutes so far
have been devoted to
Star Wars in some way or another.
A little bit.
So, did you see Jason Aaron's run on Thor is ending?
I did.
I have to get caught up.
I pre-ordered the book, the War of the Realms.
Yeah, so I lost it shortly after the end of Jane Thor and the return of Thor, but Thor still wasn't worthy. He didn't have his hammer back yet.
Right.
So that's where I left off, so I'm definitely some issues behind.
I'm excited to see what he does next. You know, he was on Doctor Strange for a little while. He's got Southern Bastards, which I believe is still going. I actually just recently read Jason Aaron's Punisher Max, which I didn't even know was a thing. I just always thought it was Garth Ennis who did it, but he does his own Punisher Max series, and I was like, holy cow, it's insanely good.
Well, you know, I would love to see him get picked up from DC for a while, see what he could do with some of those characters.
There's an NDA in there, like, or non-compete. They both have them, real strict ones.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I mean,
because it was a huge thing that Bendis went over to.
Bendis went. Lemire was on DC, went to Marvel, and then just left straight up. Mike Diodato just left Marvel after 24 years. And he's been an artist for Marvel forever, for 27 years. Marvel's, they're making some really dumbass choices, so.
I think the events are just destroying comics.
Too many tie-ins.
It's too many tie-ins, it's too many events. You know, there was Secret Wars. I bought every single issue of Futures End from DC, and that was a horrible 52-issue run.
Yeah.
Like, too much.
So they do it once a year. You know, we talk about it in our geek group. The DC one's going to be, like, Rise of the Villains or something like that, and then Marvel's got War of the Realms. And so they usually do one in the summertime, and then they might do another one in the spring. Fall. I think the biggest thing is like, and we're going to learn more when Emerald City Comic Con is like next week, or might even be this weekend, actually. But that is a true comic book convention. While a lot of these other ones are more pop culture cons, that one is where the big guys all come and like talk about there's a big panel that comes, which is all the heads of all the comic book companies. And they talk about the state of comics, and you always hear some crazy stories come out of it. Like, I remember a couple years ago, Dark Horse, the head of Dark Horse was like, we need to stop making variant covers. We have to stop this. Like, I know we do it, but all you do it, and we're killing people. Like, they don't want to pay for 18 different issues of one comic. It didn't stop anybody, because clearly Batman or Detective Comics 1000, there's like 100 variants.
Yeah, there's only one time I think I've bought a comic for variant covers, and it was the last issue of Lock and Key.
Yeah.
I bought two copies on. But yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, I won't even tell you how many Mark Millar variant covers I have, because he does about 5 for each, and I have all of them for certain comics.
The comic world, it's becoming too overwhelming, too saturated again.
In the book world, yeah, I think we're okay in the movies and TV, like, because I keep digesting it all the movies, like all the TV shows. I'm like, okay, keep bringing them.
I think the book world is becoming too complicated again.
Yeah, again. I agree.
Yeah. Well, we're approaching the hour mark, so.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it was great having you on.
Yeah, I like the format, the no format.
Yeah, I mean, there's no cards. We're just kind of letting the conversation flow, see where it takes us.
Yeah.
You know, each guest will make it a little more unique in that. So.
Thanks for having me on the podcast, on the podcast.
Thank you for coming on the Mental Podcast. Do you have any pluggables, Twitter, any of that stuff that you want
to grab on? Yeah, hold on. So don't forget a towel.com is my geek website. Like I said, the It's going to be Inferi, I-N-F-E-R-I, on Kickstarter. That launches April 16th. I don't know when this is airing, but it's going to launch then. You could probably still get it by the time you listen. You know, if you want to see me talk about food and drinks here in Rochester, check out the Rock Connoisseur. And if you want to just chat with me, you can follow me on Twitter at Chaz Voltaire. All one word.
Cool. Well, every episode I'm going to end with some sort of quote or saying that's kind of hit something for me. I think you listened to my intro and I did way too long of a quote on that. It took me multiple takes to get through that whole thing. So, you know, I'm going to keep it a little simpler here. Do a Watsky song. Some lyrics from Tiny Glowing Screens Part 3. So, nothing matters. So it doesn't matter if nothing matters. And while you be true. And if you won't, fuck you.